Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the Fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pies.
My wife's cakes are selling at Hotcakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like?
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with me, Matt Bentman. And today we are paying a visit to the new Afghan coffee house and restaurant in Mill Road. We'll be catching up with Afric Food, which opened recently in Hills Road. We've a trip to see Wee Vinateca in Burwash Manor to get Duncan Gammy's wine pairing recommendations. And we'll be finding out how the Daily Bread Cooperative is getting on, because, well, it almost closed a year ago. Now, I'm by myself in the Cambridge 105 studio today. Alan Alder is on holiday, and Sue Bailey, well, Sue is at a conference where she's involved in making a haricot of venison, a garth cake baked in a garth, which is a wooden hoop, and using Britain's earliest recipe for a layered trifle of sack-soaked macaroons topped with a rosewater syllabub. Well, let's hope she brings something back for us to try. As usual, we have plenty of local food news. I'll be looking at what free food there is on offer in Cambridge today. And at the end of the programme, our local jobs roundup. So, plenty on the menu. And first, we're going to begin with a new coffee shop and restaurant. That's the one that's opened in Mill Road. Now, opening a new restaurant or coffee shop, that's not terribly unusual. But what is unusual is that it is Afghan. Alan went along on its second day of opening to sample one of its dishes. He spoke to Miriam and her husband, CR.
Miriam, it's exciting to see an Afghan restaurant opening in Cambridge. I think it's going to create a huge amount of interest. Have you had much interest so far? You've only been open one day.
We've had a huge amount of interest. We've had an interest in social media. Since we've been open, even closed, we've had people coming in asking us about when we're opening, what we're serving here. And I think, like a lot of people who love Afghan cuisine, we've had to go to London or Birmingham to source Afghan food. And it's great that we can offer it now in Cambridge to all of our customers.
I suppose the first thing I wondered was, how do you pronounce the name of the restaurant?
It's pronounced Noshe, and it comes from Noshe Jan, which means nourish your soul. So a bit like how we would say bon appetit, when we give food in Afghan culture, we say Noshe Jan. So we want the food to nourish your soul.
Right, but you're not just a restaurant, are you? You're open for quite long hours, I think.
We're not just a restaurant, we're also a coffee house, and we roast our own coffee here. At the moment, we have a blend called First Lady, which we source from Brazil, which is an all-female owned and managed farm in Brazil, which is something we're really excited about. So the coffee shop is open at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's open all throughout the day into the evening, serving coffee drinks, appetizers, pastries, cakes that we bake in-house as well.
You bake them in-house, so what sort of things?
So we have honey cake, which is a very traditional cake in lots of parts of the world, but also Afghanistan. We sell the bolani, which is a pastry filled with leek or potato. So that's one of our great sellers in the cafe. We have a breakfast and lunch menu as well. And then in the evening time, the place kind of transitions into evening dinner. And that's when the restaurant and our waiters and waitresses come in and take over.
Yeah, right. So it's an all-day eating place.
It's an all-day eating place. We're very passionate about making sure we're properly inclusive. We have toys for children. We have space for mothers to come with their babies. I am someone who is constantly looking for a place to sit down in peace with my child when she was first born. And so this is something we want to provide here as well.
So it's a real community asset.
Absolutely. We hope it will be. We really want this to be a place that the community can come together, enjoy great food, enjoy great coffee in a comfortable environment.
Yeah. See, you're from Afghanistan. So what are you missing in English restaurants that you're going to rectify here? What's good in Afghan cuisine?
So, yes, I am from Afghanistan. The stuff that we don't have in British cuisine is mantu, which is your steamed lamb mince dumplings mixed with a topping of flavorful tomato sauces. We have the qabli palau, which is our most famous dish in Afghanistan, is the national dish of Afghanistan, which is rice dish, long basmati rice with meat, raisins and carrots, which makes the rice nice and sweet. These are the things that I really miss, so I brought it here in Cambridge.
That's fantastic. And what about getting the ingredients, the spices? Are you using ones from Afghanistan?
So there are spices that you just can't find here in the UK. Fig powder is one of them. Figs, they're fruits, we eat them, but we use them to marinate our meats. And they are delicious when you put it on meat. Nobody knows about this. The Afghans are experts in marinating meats the right way.
And what about vegetarianism, veganism? Is that big in Afghanistan, or have you had to adjust to that?
We don't have veganism in Afghanistan, unfortunately. It is something that we are very proud to serve our customers. We have definitely vegetarian options. We have aubergine dishes, which our chefs from Afghanistan make very special here. We have the bamia, which is the okra, also known as lady fingers. We have sabzi palak, which is spinach. Mantu can also be made on request, vegetarian as well. We have vegan options. Unfortunately, Afghanistan's dishes are not many vegan options, so we've sort of have to adapt for our customers. We're very much into providing a service for a diverse community, and we're very proud to have female workers, male workers from different origins of the world.
What about drinks? What sort of drinks are you serving? I mean, you've mentioned coffee, obviously.
We have coffees. We have a selection of Afghan teas and teas from around the world as well. Our cold drinks are the traditional rubicons, etc., that comes with dinner. But we also have some Afghan drinks that will be seasonal. So in Afghanistan, they make some different yogurt drinks. We'll have fruit drinks, depending on the season as well, pomegranate juices, etc. So, yeah, our drinks menu will hopefully be comprehensive and suitable to every flavour.
Right. I've not come across Afghan teas before.
Afghan tea, the traditional Afghan tea is a green tea with cardamom. So it's a very perfumed tea with cardamom flavour. And it's served with nukul, which is a sugared almond that has rose water in the coating of the almond. And it's delicious. It's great for after a nice dinner.
Yeah. So no alcohol?
No alcohol. This space is going to be alcohol-free, so we don't have bring your own bottle. It's alcohol-free completely.
Yeah, right. And one other question I was going to ask is, I mean, I have eaten in Afghanistan, but it was a long time ago, and it was only for one night, but I can't remember what I had. But how spicy is Afghanistan food?
Afghan cuisine is very simple, and it really lets the flavours of the ingredients speak for themselves, and it doesn't have a huge amount of spice or chilli. So how Afghan cuisine is that you have the flavour, and then you always have a chutney that we serve alongside everything, and it's a tangy, garlicky, spicy sauce that you can add on top. It's a nice cut through for your rice and meat dishes and your vegetarian dishes as well.
Are you open every day of the week?
Not on Mondays. So we're closed on Mondays, but every other day of the week we'll be open.
Brilliant. Well, I wish you good luck. What you've done to this place, it just looks wonderful. Wonderful. Great atmosphere.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you.
You know, Alan tried one of those dishes. It was the balani, and that's the pastry filled with leek or potato that Miriam mentioned. And he said it was superb, a bit like a crepe, but with a crispiness to the pastry. And inside, delicately spiced slices of leek with a lovely sauce to go with it. Noche is an exciting place to go. It's welcoming, it's relaxed, it's beautifully decorated, and with good food. Alan says it deserves every success, and he simply can't wait to go back and try some of their marinated meat dishes. Now, details of free food available in and around Cambridge. The information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app, which exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste. And today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Alison, who lives near Great Shelford, has plain naans, tiger baguettes and tiger rolls, as well as plenty of loose bakery items to give away, including almond croissants, chocolate croissants, pain au chocolat and cheese twists. Meanwhile, BG of Arbury Road has 2 cans of tinned carrots and 2 tins of Heinz tomato soup available, and 2 packs of rich tea biscuits, presumably to dunk in the soup. Tom in King's Hedges is giving away 18 tiger and white batons and a 3-cheese bloomer. I God, I love those things. Now, Ivy also in King's Hedges has a tin of baby carrots going spare. And finally, Jing, who lives in Harston, has got four packs of white pitters and a Tesco Finest Halki Diki and Kalamata Olive Batard. That's a very fancy loaf, in other words. And that is some of the food items that's currently doing the rounds on Olio at the moment. Do give Olio a try if you can, because it's free. It's a really great way to get rid of or pick up unwanted food. And you can set preferences within the app, such as distance. If you only want to find items that are within a walking distance from you, you can set it that way. Now, there's another free app called Too Good To Go, and that has unsold food from restaurants, cafes and shops, often at less than half price. This is a really good deal. Instead of specifying each unsold item, the surplus food is simply put into what they call a magic bag, ready for you to take home. And that saves it from being binned at the end of the day's trading. Now, some of the companies that have used the Too Good To Go method include Greggs in Cherry Hinton, Novi, Namaste, Pret, Upper Crust, Marks & Spencer at the station, Spa in Chesterton and Sawston, the Co-op in Sawston as well, Marks & Spencer's at Addenbrookes Hospital, Barrington Village Stores, Budgeons in Arbury, the Clayton Hotel, and plenty more. Really good idea. So let's move on to our first of our news breaks now. And Deborah, Biscotti di Deborah, her Saturday openings have returned at Dry Drayton. They are open from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. today, with an earlier closing should they sell out. Now, here's news of something that you might want to eat with caution. It's a talk about the science of magic mushrooms. It takes place at Cambridge Junction on the 17th of September at 7 p.m. There's an unusual event coming up at the Gog Farm Shop. It's a wildfire cookery class, or held on the 13th, 20th and 27th of September, each one starting at 5:30 p.m. There's going to be a variety of techniques taught by Laturo Vargas, starting with building a fire, then butchering the meat, preparing the vegetables, cooking with fire, and making chimichurri salsa. There'll be a wildfire feast under canvas with South American wines and local beers, maybe even an enactment of Lord of the Flies whilst they're at it. The cost for that is £185. Next up, there's an Italian pop-up on the 19th of September at Little Piggy in Fenstanton. Booking for that is essential, so you'll need to email cafe@littlepiggycatering.co.uk, or you can telephone them 01480 227 420. Now, from the 19th to the 22nd of September, there is the Shepworth Beer and Music Festival. That's at the Plough, with 16 real ales, 7 taps of craft beer, and 6 food trucks. And there's going to be lots of live music too, covering folk, blues, country, and funk. Hidden Piperdini has a supper club on the 20th of September in collaboration with Elisa Arani of My Foodie Days. Tickets for that are £50. And coming up at Ben's Yard near Ely on the 21st of September, it's the regular Maker's Market, while the next Gransden's Farmer's Market is going to be on the 22nd of September. 38 producers have signed up for that day, many of them food sellers. And finally, for now, we head over to Congratulations Corner to see Tradizioni Restaurant in Mill Road has made it to the finals of Best Trattoria in the 8th Annual Italian Awards. Well done to them, and we will have more news later.
Food-wise?
To err is human.
So...
we...
But good food is divine. So listen to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio.
We'll put the heating on as well.
We've got nice fairy lights.
Have you heard of Afric Food? It serves Nigerian dishes, and it began in 2010 by a lady called Bisi, who ran it from home. Now, that's because the same year she was turned down for a stall on Cambridge Market because, and I quote, they weren't looking for any more food stalls. That sounds a bit crazy now, doesn't it? But it was a different time. Now, however, you can't swing a cat in Cambridge Market without hitting a food stall. It took another 6 years before Bisi got her place on the market, and she featured on this programme shortly after. Fast forward to today, and there are plenty of international food stalls on Cambridge Market. And you get some quite famous people passing through.
Well, yeah. In fact, before the king became the king, mm-hmm. he came to my stall. He came to my store, we spoke, and that's on my Facebook. It's been great. The market is great.
And so, Afric Food got its proper start on the Cambridge market in 2016. And Afric Food serves Nigerian food.
When you have your plate, you can see different colours. And then when you try, you taste different flavours. Mm. We do a lot of vegetarian food. So when I came to the market, normally people would do sandwiches, falafel, wraps. But when I came with my veggie food, they were like, what? This is veggie? And it's so popular. I mean, all the food are gluten-free, freshly cooked. Description of Nigerian food basically is just catching with your eyes, the colors and the flavor. We do a lot of peppers, onions. We like spice. We like spice because we believe it's good for the body itself, like spicy. Yeah.
And now, BC has opened a new restaurant on Hills Road, and it's also called Afric Food.
I'm where I am now because of that platform.
Yeah.
People get to know Nigerian food through that market. And now we have a restaurant. It's good. True that we become the number one quick bite in Cambridgeshire. That's excellent. Yeah. And now it's like a signature, like they call the spicy goat, spicy chicken. And the spicy chicken is like chicken breast shredded. They love that. At first I was doing chicken leg. That didn't go well.
Because I think things like shredded pork were really popular about 8 years ago when it started off.
So this is what people like now with the spicy chicken shredded, and then the goat sometimes shredded. And then the spice, many people will say, okay, I cannot get spicy food in the UK. When I tried yours, that's it. Because we're dealing with international people as well, so they're used to spice. They're like, some people will say, I feel like home. This is what I want. Yeah, feel like home. Come back.
Spices. Nigerian food has a lot of spice. BC found that she had to tone down the spiciness to appeal more to the average person. A bit like how Indian dishes had to be redesigned to suit the milder British palate. Conversely, she says that about 80% of her custom comes from students, international students. The next biggest chunk is the tourists, and then finally the locals.
Does this mean maybe you have to have two levels of spice?
Yeah, and now most of them, before they left, I actually trained them to know how to eat spicy. They will now challenge me and say, it's not spicy enough. I'm like, what? Bring the level up again, because now they're used to it. And they can see that it tastes better, spicy.
Yeah.
I don't have the palate to deal with really spicy dishes, so I'll have to take BC's word for that. But it is good to know that you can train your palate, just like you can train your muscles, your brain, your reflexes. Train your palate. Because if you get used to those spices, you'll develop a better appreciation for the food.
So now with your new restaurant here on Hills Road, you've been open a few months. Is it still a similar situation where it's largely students and international people who are your customers?
Because we opened in June, when the students are not here.
Yeah.
They're not back. So we thought it was going to be a very quiet time, but it's been the opposite. So we've been having families, work, lunchtime, sit down, families coming for dinner every day, new people. Like new people as well. I'm surprised, like, wow. Yes. I would say that's the difference between the street food and the restaurant.
Yeah.
People have been waiting for, we want to dine. And that's what I got now. Yeah.
So here's a few items from the Afric Food menu.
So I came in with the beans, the plantain, and I created a jumbo, like I call it veggie mix. In Nigeria, we don't eat like that. We can eat beans and rice or beans and yam.
Yeah.
But I mix everything up, like beans, rice, plantain, and yam with the sauce. It's called veggie mix. You can only get it from me. Yeah, it's been so popular. And it's good food. Yam is very healthy, beans, very healthy. The only thing that is not so great is the fried plantain, because it's fried. So that's the veggie.
Yeah.
And demand for vegetarian and vegan options is growing rapidly, she says. When Bissy started selling on Cambridge Market, vegetarian orders accounted for maybe 30% of total orders. Today, it's more like 70%. That's how big it's grown.
You mentioned the fried plantain being perhaps not so healthy, but then it's fried and it's probably delicious anyway.
Very.
But also, one of the reasons it brought me here was because I was told that Alex Rushmer, the chef over at Vanderlyle on Mill Road, who has also been on MasterChef on TV, and he was talking about your plantain and how lovely it was.
Really?
Yeah. Ooh. But I don't think everyone knows necessarily what plantain is.
Yeah. I think when I came to the market, I was thinking plantain is only Nigerians. I got to know that Brazilian have plantain, Venezuela have plantain, Colombia have plantain. Like, they said, plantain? You know plantain? Yeah. So plantain is quite popular.
Yeah.
Just like jollof rice. I mean, jollof rice, everybody knows jollof rice. Like, they want to try jollof rice. If I bring any other rice, jollof rice.
Jollof rice. One of the most popular staples of Nigerian cuisine. It's made from rice, pimento and scotch bonnet peppers, onions, tomatoes, garlic, and African spices too. It's one of those recipes that changes across Africa. And you can change it too, to suit your tastes. Say with carrot. Diced carrot, peas, sweet corn.
Jollof rice has been the best seller ever. In fact, I stopped doing fried rice and plain rice now, unless someone has, jollof rice.
Oh.
Yeah. So plantain is popular. Jollof rice is popular as well. Yeah.
And of course, it tastes great with fried plantain. Though I imagine anything tastes good with fried plantain next to it.
We all know frying is not great. It's delicious. And it goes with everything.
Yeah.
Everything. So that, with the combination of the rice meal, the veggie meal, it's just too much. It's delicious.
Yeah.
God. Yeah.
And for the meat eaters, it might be worth you trying the goat.
Again, when I started, nobody knows about goats. In fact, someone would see goat, what, goat? No, you eat goat? I say, yeah. Because it's actually healthy, it's lean, it has high iron. So, in Nigeria, we do a lot of goats. Let's bring it on. And now, spicy goat is the best seller.
Yeah.
Then I introduce the non-spicy goat and the goat with spinach.
Yeah.
And now, the three of them are just... like, yes, goat in rescue, yes. Anything goat, people just go for. And the grilled one as well, if you grill it and just have it with... So the flavour, this is what we're talking about, like our food. The taste, the flavour, I mean, yes. It's not just about, making money or just selling. It's about the best, to my knowledge. And then I offer it to people. And they can see that too. And that's it. Yeah, I believe that.
And Bisi is planning to extend the menu offerings. It's just a case of getting more chefs, which, as we found in recent years, speaking to restaurants, butchers and cafes around the city, there's just not enough people. Brexit and COVID has either scared them off into other industries or they simply haven't been able to return to the UK. But what is on the menu is doing really well. And you can find Afric Food at 42 Hills Road. It's next door to the Cambridge Oven, and it's opposite the Emperor Pub. And the Afric Food stall at Cambridge Market, that's still there too. So that's two sites to get your Afric Food fix. OK, time for some more news now, and time to pour yourself a glass, because it's... And we start with some very good wine news. Amphora's Wednesday night wine tastings have returned. The first is on the 11th of September at the earlier time of 7 p.m. and the focus is a blind tasting of the difference between budget and premium wines. The cost for that is £38 and it takes place at the Sage of Cambridge Cafe at 33A Milton Road, part of the Fellows House, but with its own entrance. At the same venue on the 18th of September, it's same grape, different region. That's also £38. And on the 25th of September, it's How to Blind Taste. This one costs £45, and there will be 10 wines, 5 whites and 5 reds. Bookings can be made on the Amphora website. Next up is Cambridge Wine Merchants. They have an Italian wine tour where you can explore a selection of 25 white and red wines. This is on the 21st of September. It's from 2 till 6 p.m. at their Cherry Hinton Road branch. And before then, there is a gin tasting. That's on the 11th of September. And a pub quiz with a blind tasting round. All of those events are at the Cherry Hinton Road branch of the Cambridge Wine Merchants. Now, the Cambridge Wine School has an introduction to wine tasting at the King Street Cellar on the 17th of September at 7 p.m. It costs £35 and is aimed at people who are new to wine or want to understand the basics of wine tasting. So, there will be 6 wines from around the world, differing quite widely in style. The sorts of ideas covered include sipping, swirling, sniffing, identifying aromas and flavours, learning about the influence of climate, the effect of oak, and other winemaking techniques. And you can book a place there at the Cambridge Wine School website. The cost is £35. And the following week, on the 24th of September, Cambridge Wine School has the first of the 6-week World of Wine course, which costs £195. Earlier in the week, when we checked, there was only 5 places left, so you might need to be quick on that one. At the Wine Rooms in Hills Road, there is a tasting of wines from northern Spain with wine specialist Steve Hovington, and he's just come back from Spain too. That's on the 18th of September. There's also a tasting of Australian wines, again hosted by Steve, and that's on the 25th of September. They're both evening events, and the cost for each is £30. Next up is Gutter and Stars, because their next tasting on the 19th of September has sold out, but you can always ask if there's been a cancellation. And that puts a cork in our wine news for today. Coming up after the break, there is a visit to the Daily Bread in King's Hedges and some wine and food pairing advice from Duncan Gammy of Wee Vinateca Wine Shop. Don't go away, because, well, this is all I've got in my life.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
On Cambridge 105 Radio, former City Council leader Lewis Herbert investigates some of the issues being faced by Cambridge residents.
They're national problems, but in Cambridge it is accentuated because it's such a city of riches. Housing, even food, just living in Cambridge costs more.
Identifying what needs to change nationally and what we can do locally.
It's ensuring that the wider public in Cambridge understands some of the secondary challenges that lack of money causes, and building on a number of amazing charities in the city who are both supporting, but also passing direct financial help.
Cambridge Challenges with Lewis Herbert, Sunday at midday on Cambridge 105 Radio. Listen live on Radio Player.
We're live and local
all day long.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Welcome back to Flavour. Now, an excellent place to buy food in Cambridge is Daily Bread, which is off King's Hedges Road. It's next to a huge free car park, so that makes it really convenient too. However, last year, the future of this vegetarian whole food shop was in peril, a consequence of more people shopping online since COVID. It pulled through, though, but this is still a quiet time of year, and we wondered how it was getting on. So, Alan went for a visit on Thursday to speak with Henrik about it.
I know a while ago, Henrik, you came close to possibly closing and things then picked up. And I know that the end of summer can be slow. I was wondering how this summer had gone and whether you're out of the slow period.
I would say, honestly, we're in the middle of the slow period currently. As you're well aware, last year we had our Use Us or Lose Us. We were a few weeks away from closing at that point. We had a massive community response to that where literally, I think, triple our normal customers came in on a single day, and that was very impressive, almost completely emptied the shelves. That helped us get back on our feet a lot, and especially over the winter is normally very good for us. That's been improving our situation as well, but the end of summer, especially August, September, obviously a lot of people have just finished spending a lot of money over the summer for holidays, things like that. We tend to see not a lot of people in during that time. Now, we have been keeping steady, I would say. We've been keeping stable. We're able to cover our expenses, but it's still not a particularly safe position. So it's quite stressful, but at the moment we are doing okay.
Yeah, I mean, when I came in last, because I do shop here, the range seemed to have increased. The range of things you were selling seemed to have got back to what it had previously been. Is it true to say that?
Oh, that's definitely true, yes. As part of coming close to closing, one of the things we had to do was cut back on the range quite a lot, because one of the things, for instance, is our pack downs. Normally those take quite a lot of hours of work to create.
What's a pack down?
Pack downs are our goods that are packed in store. So we pack...
So you buy in bulk and then you divide it into packs of different weight.
Yeah, and we have a lot of things that we pack down. We pack down dried fruits, grains, flour, and also things like rice. A lot of staples that people like to buy in large quantities. But again, with coming close to closing... we were able to hire less in terms of staffing. We couldn't pack down as much as we could. Now that we're recovering, we're able to put a lot more of that back on the shelves, which is good because that's one of the things that a lot of people really come here for.
And you're doing local deliveries as well.
That is correct, yes. One of the causes for our struggle in the first place was a lack of people coming through the doors. Obviously, a lot of this was due to COVID. The restrictions then meant that people didn't want to go out and come into the shop. But even afterwards, we've noticed that that trend has still continued to an extent. A lot fewer people are going out to buy food. There's a lot more reliance on delivery. So as a result, we've worked on setting up a local delivery system where if you're living within 10 kilometers of the store, you can place an order online, and I at the moment will cycle out and bring it to you.
Oh, it's all done by bike, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go through some of the things that you sell, because I don't know how aware people are of that. Just give me a quick resume of the sorts of things you sell, Henry.
Well, we sell quite a lot here. We've got a lot of staples. We've got grains, flours, rice. We've got dried fruits, we've got spices, olive oil, we've got juice. We've got quite a large selection, actually, of Cambridge-grown apple juice, various sweets and chocolates. Some of the chocolate here is especially good, actually.
you sound like you're a connoisseur.
I am. And we've also got a variety of refills, and that includes both, again, grains, organic grains, but also home goods, things like shampoo, conditioner, cleaning products you can refill.
And the refill station, let's just have a look at the refill station. I see it's got a big sign on it saying organic.
Indeed it does.
So there's things like wheat flakes, barley flakes, jumbo oats, porridge oats, pumpkin seeds.
All of these.
Everything you could need, really.
Yes. And you can fill a bag to the amount that you need.
Oh, yeah, it's a weighing machine.
Pay by weight.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. And you've got a good range of flour as well.
Yes, that we do. Quite a lot of this is from the Cambridge area as well. We've got flour from Pryors here, various white wholemeal spelt, and we also have flour from Wicken Windmill as well.
Pryors, of course, is a windmill as well, isn't it? So you're big on windmilled flour.
Indeed we are.
And you have some fresh produce as well, don't you? Yeah, and so this is fruit and vegetables.
Yeah, fruit and vegetables.
Yeah. And bread.
Bread as well,
Where is the bread from?
From quite a few bakeries around Cambridge as well.
Yeah, oh, that's tremendous, right. There's a big range of jams.
One of the other things we sell, actually, is honey, Cambridge honey. And, again, one of the big things that we work on is trying to get everything in here. A lot of it's organic, most of it's vegan, all of it's vegetarian. And there's also a lot of focus on fair trade products and on local products to try and get those transport miles down.
Yeah, yeah. I must say, I'm rather intrigued by this organic raw Greek thyme honey from Crete. That's just I'm going to have to get some of that.
Honestly, all the honey is quite delicious. In the chillers, we have quite a large fermented range, actually. We've got kimchi, sauerkraut,
Again, those are made by Totally Cultured, which I believe is a Cambridge company as well. We sell fresh yeast, which I know a lot of bakers are very interested in.
Yes, yes. And a cafe.
And a cafe.
With some extremely nice-looking cakes.
Yes, cakes, pastries, spinach rolls. And if you come in, you can get any one of our... We've got quite a big range of teas and coffees. You can buy them to take home, obviously, but you can also drink them in-store, prepared for you by our staff. And again, we have cold drinks as well, if that's what you'd prefer.
Yeah. That's tremendous. What a huge range and what a huge building this is.
Certainly.
And a lot of parking outside as well, so there's no difficulty in...
Yeah, no shortage of that.
Yeah, yeah. And you have things like shampoo as well.
Yes, shampoo, soap, refillable deodorant.
And you obviously have a strong philosophy that guides the company, the organic, the local, the delivery, the desire to reduce plastic use.
Yes, definitely. We're an ethical retailer is what we think of ourselves as. We are not non-profit, but we're not for-profit, if you get the idea behind that. We're not doing this for the sake of making money, we're doing it for the sake of giving a service to the community,
yeah,
as it were.
Brilliant. That's fantastic, Heinrich. Let's hope the customers flood in before the end of September. Thanks very much.
Yeah, and thank you.
That was Alan speaking to Heinrich at Daily Bread, which is open 7 days a week. And if it was run by the Beatles, it'd be open 8 days a week. Now, the cafe is open all day and it only closes half an hour before the shop itself does. I thought that was an important point to mention because, well, how many times have we all been caught out by a cafe that closes early? So, that's Daily Bread Cooperative in King's Hedges, close to the Cambridge Regional College. Now, for today's final feature, Sue has met up with Duncan Gammy, who runs Wee Vinoteca Wine Shop at Burwash Manor in Barton, to talk about food and wine pairing. And this time, it's pairing wines with pizza.
We've had a lot of customers asking us this question at home recently. So I think the rise of these kind of fantastic little pizza ovens has led to a lot of people cooking pizzas at home. And so we've been looking at what wine pairings can go with this.
Of course, the problem is you can have rather a lot of different types of pizzas, can't you?
Yes. And so what we've got here is I've taken four options that consistently seem to work, but also know that these kind of cover a lot of bases. And I think the fact that there can be so many different toppings is part of the fun with pizzas, but it does mean that wine pairing-wise, there can be a bit of confusion. So I think whenever we have a spicy element, we're really wanting to mellow that out with either lower levels of alcohol or something that's lovely and fruity in style. For example, one of the red wines I've got here is a Barbera di Piemonte. So this is from up near Milan, the same part of the world wine-wise where we get things like Barolo, which are these really big, serious wines. And Barbera is their kind of light and fruity and everyday drinker. And so this is a wine that, you know, we retail here, I think, under £12 a bottle. It's very bright, fruity, red cherry. It's very, very drinkable. And so that's quite a nice thing. It kind of softens the heat, if you will. One of the other options, and this is going to be controversial, but trust me on this, is we have here a lovely sparkling red from Italy. So those that have tried sparkling red in Italy will 100% get this. Those that have not are missing out. And so this is actually a blend of Barbera, the grape variety we were just talking about, and another one called Bernarda. And in essence, what we have here is a light, fruity red with a bit of fizz. Needs to be served chilled, like any sparkling wine. And I think that extra lightness from the spritz just makes it very, very drinkable. And this is a kind of a classic Italian option for pairing with pizza.
And what is the name of this one?
So this is called the Guttardio. And as I said, it's something, if I'm honest, we as a business have been searching for really good sparkling Italian red for ages. And we found lots of stuff that was okay, but just okay. We found one that was excellent, but was unfortunately priced accordingly. And it was more of a special treat than a fun for pizza. And then we found this and we couldn't be happier. It is just such a lovely, fun thing. And I think if you've got a group of people around and you're doing that little pizza party thing where everyone's making their own pizza, having the option to serve a chilled, sparkling red is just really fun and a bit different.
That sounds really nice. And what's its flavour then?
Because it's a blend of Barbera, the grape variety we talked about earlier, we do get a lot of that kind of bright cherry notes in it. The other grape variety, Bernarda, adds kind of almost like a dark raspberry note. So the closest thing can relate to is, you know, that Chambord liqueur. Oh. How it's kind of, it's fresh, but it's deeper and richer in flavour.
Oh, I love that liqueur.
And so you've kind of almost got a combination of those two things. Even sometimes get a little bit of like cranberry juice freshness in it. It is a very light and bright sparkling red.
And what's the price of this one?
So this one we have, I think it's $19.50. So as far as the world of sparkling wine goes, especially the small family-run estate sort of stuff that you would find in independent wine merchants, for a good sparkling, that's pretty good as far as I'm concerned.
And it looks really rather nice. I love the sort of cored closure. Is that typical of Italian sparklers?
What this is frizzante. So it's basically not a full sparkling wine like a champagne would. It's kind of halfway between. And because there is a lower amount of pressure in the bottle, instead of it having that kind of classic wire cage that you would see on champagne, what they've actually just done is put a fairly regular cork and tied it with a bit of string. And so that does mean that opening it can confuse people. You do need to have a bottle opener, but there is a bit of pressure.
So you can't pop it then?
No, not this one. I mean, I'm sure if you would just shake it up enough, the cork would come out. But the plan of attack here would be to remove the string using the little knife on your corkscrew and then remove the cork.
We've dealt with the sort of spicy pizza option with a more lighter, fresh, but still strong enough to cope with things red. And then this really lovely idea of the sparkling red. The two wines that you haven't talked about yet, what are those? And could you tell me a little bit more about them and why they're suitable for pizza?
So both of the wines are from Sicily. I love Sicily. I think it represents a really good value for money area of Italy. We've got a white wine and a red wine. The white wine is using an indigenous grape variety called Grio. Grio has got very kind of bright citrus and green apple notes, which are great broad appeal. Everyone's going to be really happy with this and is very good before food as well as with food. But what I think works really nicely here is it's got an extra kind of herbaceous complexity to it, and that makes it really food friendly. And so with the Grio, I'm more thinking of your maybe more seafood style pizzas or things with chicken, just something a bit lighter and fresher in style. This would be a really good option. The red, the other option, this is actually by the same producer, and this is made using a grape variety called Nero d'Avola. Again, an indigenous Sicilian grape variety, one that almost went extinct and was kind of brought back from the edge, so to speak. This Nero d'Avola has gone through a little bit of oak, so it's a bit richer, it's a bit more complex. And so with the Nero d'Avola, I almost think it's that kind of meat feast style pizza. You know, it would be a really big, rich style option for that. And again, something that has proven to be really popular with or without food. I guess you could kind of liken it to a Shiraz or a Syrah.
So the sort of tasting notes on that, what would they be?
Really black cherry on this one. And as I said, it's had a little bit of thyme and oak. And what that gives is just a subtle kind of hint of vanilla, a little bit of spiciness, and just a bit extra complexity to it.
Sicilian wines aren't particularly well known, are they? Considering it's a country the size of Wales, so I gather, why are they not more well known?
I think, as with a lot of Italy, it struggles with the problem of using their indigenous grape varieties. And so what happened in Sicily was for a while they were ripping out their indigenous grape varieties to plant Shiraz and Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc. And then, as I was saying with the Nero d'Avola, they actually kind of did a U-turn and decided that these indigenous grape varieties should be celebrated. Whilst that's a fantastic thing for the world of wine, if you've got a wine list and you've got a Shiraz or Sauvignon Blanc, and then next to it you've got a Nero d'Avola and a Grillo, you're probably going to go for the thing you recognise. So I think Sicilian wines are definitely becoming more popular because people are becoming more adventurous, but there's that kind of slight confusing element you've got to overcome.
People have become more adventurous in terms of trying different types of wines. And I suppose this is where a good sommelier is going to actually push people to get out of their comfort zone a bit, isn't it?
Yes, I think from my perspective, this is obviously the really fun part of work for us, is someone coming in and saying, I drink Shiraz from Australia. And it's nice, but I want to be a bit more adventurous. I want to learn what else is out there. I want to be able to have a wine list in front of me and pick the options based on what I would like rather than what I recognise. And so we've certainly seen an increase in people wanting to try more adventurous options. You know, we have some really lovely wines from Greece in, and that's quite adventurous as far as I'm concerned. And Italy and Portugal are great places for this as well because they use these indigenous grape varieties. So it's definitely something we've seen an increase in, I would say.
And it makes obviously a lot more sense to use an indigenous variety because they're suited to the climate, they're suited to the soil.
Yeah, and they're also typically suited to the food. You know, again, if you think of Malbec in Argentina, it's very different to a Malbec grown in France. And the reason is because the Malbec in Argentina is grown to suit the lifestyle and the cuisine of Argentina, which is mainly beef.
That's a good point, because I don't think a lot of people think like that. They, as you say, they go for what they know, but then don't go out of their comfort zone.
Yes, so we, when we kind of try and explain food and wine pairing to people, a very simple and effective thing is to talk about, it's called regionality, but what grows together goes together. And so typically the wine of a region will roughly match the food of a region. And so, again, we've used Argentina and Malbec, Aussie Shiraz and barbecue food, Albarino and fresh seafood. And so you can use that and kind of get a fairly good clue on what will work food and pairing wise.
And have you got any interesting things coming up in the next few months?
I guess the two main things we're focusing on is, firstly, in the next 5 weeks or so, we are going to lots of our kind of big importer tastings. And this is where we get to try all the new wines coming to the UK. And then we will make the very fun and obviously very difficult choices of what wines we'd like to stock for Christmas. So that's probably the biggest and most important thing for us at the moment. You've got to get that right. On a similar but separate note, we have just kind of released a lot of our events for the rest of the year. And the big ones that we're focusing on are Christmas wine fairs. So we'll be hosting one here at Burwash, we'll be hosting one at Hitchin. And the idea will be, we'll be showing about 25 different wines that are suited to Christmas. So there'll be classic pairing options for your classic Christmas dinners. There'll be nice fizz for New Year's. There'll be nice toasty side the fire reds and whites. So that's mainly where my focus is at the moment, which seems mental considering it's lovely and sunny outside and we're talking about barbecues and pizzas.
I know, but hey, well, Christmas will be coming soon enough. So how do people find out about the events that are coming up?
The best way is to head over to our website. So we've got a full page about it on our website. Also on our mailing list is kind of where we keep people the most up to date. So for a lot of our events, we put them up on the website so that people can register their interest and we release tickets a bit closer to the time. And so either one of those options would be the best.
What's your website again?
WeVinoteca.com. So that's WeVinoteca.com.
So I shall head over there and start thinking about Christmas. Thank you very much, Duncan.
Absolute pleasure.
What grows together goes together. Lots of good advice from Duncan Gemmy of We Vinoteca. And, well, 25 wines to go with Christmas dinners sounds like a good shout. The only question is, does he mean 25 wines to go with your dinner, or just the one? I await pensively. And that's the familiar music signalling time for news from social media. And first up, I'd like to give a quick mention to a new place that's opened in one of the buildings behind the Beehive Centre. That's on the Lidl and the Homebase side. Now, this is called, it's called Namaste Bazaar. It's part of a small chain selling fruit and veg and Indian foods. I checked it out the other day. It's a place where you can buy plantain, cooking bananas, in other words, which BC was talking about frying earlier at the Afric Food restaurant on Hills Road. So, yeah, well worth a check if that's your thing. Next up is Kevin. He's the chef at Modigliani Cafe on Mill Road, and he's been busy posting, his new cake creations, because today he's made a pistachio flower for sale at Modigliani Cafe on Mill Road. It's the size of a tart with a praline whipped ganache, pistachio frangipan and roasted kernels with a pistachio praline crunch. I've had some of his other pistachio-based creations, and my God, they are beyond superb. They've got this creaminess, this texture, this delicate lightness and sweetness of touch. The whole thing it just gets plenty of home delivery orders, actually, when he posts about them on Instagram. Also, Alan popped up on the social media feed today. A picture of him at Noche Coffee Shop and Restaurants on Mill Road, which was nice. And if you're listening to us live on Saturday, you'll see that the weather's it's just about holding it together. And up at Wandlebury Park, it's the final day of the Kiernan's Coffee and Food Van. He's got lots of barista-style coffee cakes and sausage rolls and now a chai latte, which is new on the menu today. Also, Calverley's Brewery have posted to say they've got a new beer on tap. It's called Red Lager. At 4.5%, it has a malt-forward profile and a red, earthy hue that glows from the glass. It's made with Citra and Sars hops, and it's available via their taproom and their microbrewery, which you can find just off of Hooper Street, which itself is off of Mill Road. And just time for one more. It's Scotswell Day, the bottomless brunch and pizza joint by the Mill Road Bridge. Now, they are letting children eat free every Saturday and Sunday brunch between 9 and 10am. So I thought that was well worth mentioning here. And that is your latest social media news for today. And that is Green Onions from Booker T and the MGs, signalling the start of our job section. And we begin with Flourish, who are looking for a production manager with experience, excellent problem-solving skills and resilience. The responsibilities include managing crop production on the 80-acre farm, including all aspects of field crops, and assisting Flourish's polytunnel manager with 1.8 acres of crops. The aim is to help to improve efficiency, develop production systems, and to increase both quality and capacity. A two-bedroom cottage comes with this job. So for more information and how to apply, you can find out all about it on the Flourish website. Meanwhile, Burwash Larder in Barton is hiring a part-time deli assistant. It's for a minimum of 6 months, working 2 to 3 weekdays and 3 weekend shifts per calendar month. Now, this would suit someone on a gap year. So pop in or email if you're interested. Email info@burwashlarder.com. And finally, Midsummer House is recruiting for some front-of-house staff. If that sounds like it's your bag, send your CV to recruitment@midsummerhouse.co.uk. And you can stick a fork in today's programme because it's done. You can catch Flavour on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon. And don't forget, we are repeated on Mondays at 2 p.m. with the Flavour podcast available from all the usual places, like iTunes or even our own website. But that's all from us for today. Coming up next on Cambridge 105 Radio is The Music Mix, followed by Home with Lucy Malazzo at 4 p.m. and the Women's Sports Mix is at 6. Flavour will be back on the 21st of September with plenty more food and drink news, jobs and features. So, until then, it's Auf Wiedersehen, Pet!